What is going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here on the Absolute Basketball Podcast. In today's episode, we bring you Matt Driscoll, head coach at the University of North Florida. Today is going to be a two-part series. We had a great conversation, lots of stories, tons of, about his background going in, tons about the program, where it's at, what his vision is for where things are going, his team, and the recent success, winning three of the last six ASUN conference championships and all that kind of stuff. Moving forward, this is going to be a two-part episode. First parts will go out this morning. Second parts will go out this afternoon. Please tune in to both of them. They're both very good. Tons of information came out in it and everything. But before we get into part one, I ask that you please go ahead and subscribe to this channel. If you would also rate it 5 stars, if you would leave it a review as to what you enjoyed about this episode, that would be great. Those are very important to us. The 5-star rating, the subscription, and the review all help us in our rankings, and it helps us to get these coaches' stories and also the prospect talk. It helps us to get that in front of more people, and the more people that we get out in front of, the more these stories are told, the more these prospects are seen and heard. And in the time of this pandemic, everybody's learning. Everybody's looking for information to gather information. Everybody's trying to learn and help progress themselves and all that kind of stuff. So please subscribe, rate 5 stars, leave a review as to what you enjoyed. But without further ado, here is Matt Driscoll, head coach at the University of North Florida, on the Absolute Basketball Podcast with Jamie Shaw, part one. Thank you guys very much. What's going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here on the Absolute Basketball Podcast. I am here with the University of North Florida head coach, Matt Driscoll. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you. It's an honor to be here, and I really love to share. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, I love interaction with humans and the fact that we've known each other, but we really don't know each other.
Yep.
So we follow each other maybe on Twitter, and I think you get a pretty good feel for where people are, where people stand, and kind of where they kind of their heart lies, so to speak. And it's been neat to watch you grow and to follow you. And I know you've done different things in different places. And I know we have a young man coming from North Carolina, which is, you know, kind of up that way where you've done a lot of your basketball, so to speak. Mm-hmm. One of our best players ever that helped us win a championship, our first championship, was from South Carolina. Yeah. So we've had some guys from up that way, not a lot. Mm-hmm. Obviously Florida and Georgia. What we did, Jamie, when we got the job is Jacksonville sits right here. And we took a circle. Miami's about 6. Mm-hmm. Atlanta's 6. Charlotte's 6. And you can actually get to Auburn in 6. So that's a pretty good driving distance. And we always felt like to make it that way where kids come to school, which usually is, 3 to 4 hours? You probably know better.
Yeah.
It's probably the average distance. There's always some outliers, but that's probably the average distance. So it's really the Northeast Florida sector of what we do is really, really nice for us. But the thing we didn't know was because we were in Northeast Florida, very few people knew who we were.
Yeah.
They didn't know what North Florida looked like. I know we had LeBron here and the 04 Olympic team was here and the Magic used to practice here and all those kind of great things. But to get here, you had to drive 2.5 from Orlando. Mm-hmm. You had to drive 4 from Tampa. You had to drive 6 from Miami. So for kids to come up on unofficials or 6 from Atlanta, it was a day. It was a commitment. And
I know too, you guys aren't that far away from South Carolina. Amazingly enough, Charleston and Columbia are
Columbia's 4.5.
Yeah. About to say they're quick drives.
Yeah. Columbia's 4.5. But my point is we realized that we had to get people to campus because it's 1300 acres, right? And it's 17,000 by day. It's about 4,000 by night. Mm-hmm. We have about a $5 billion mall right out our front gate that's got everything from Tiffany's to whatever, Fogo de Tal, Texas de Brazil, mm-hmm. all the way down to Target. We call it Target and McDonald's and whatnot. So the mall is amazing. And then going the other way, we're 8 miles from what's behind me.
Yeah.
And also, too, there's only 30 cities in America. There's 32 teams, but there's only 30 cities in America with NFL teams. So we're 8 miles from downtown as well. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine having a sports team like that. You know, there's a lot going on. So it's really a unique and a very, very, very special place. And what we figured out early was everyone always said, you never finish. You never finish. Mm-hmm. Pissed me off. And so as soon as we got here, the only thing we care about is urgency never fails. Mm-hmm. Urgency never fails. And we were extremely urgent to help people understand what were we about, how we were going to play. And from the get-go, we're all about championships and what it takes. And our academia is at a whole nother level. Like our average SAT is like a 1280 mm-hmm. with like a 4.2. Like it's off the charts. High, high, high academia for a state school. Mm-hmm. So we had to find our niche and we had to figure out. And we couldn't cry over spilt milk. The fact that, well, I couldn't get Jamie in. Why? Well, don't recruit him.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not saying you, I'm just using your name. But I had a 770 SAT, so I couldn't get in. But my point is, you know, don't recruit them. You know, if you know you can't. I understand, you know, don't if you don't let if you know, there's an old saying, and I know you've heard this before. Don't let what you can do get in the way with what you can't. Mm-hmm. So if you can't recruit those, then don't get, oh my goodness, and get starry-eyed and all that stuff. Figure this out. And what we did was we knew that if we had a round peg, it would fit into our round hole.
Yeah.
And we didn't try to get squares and hammer them in and hopefully the splinters will go away and it'll fit in. Now, could we get some that were close? Maybe an oval, maybe something. Yeah, we can work that a little bit on the lathe, right? Yeah, we have a little wood shop for us here today. So, but my point is we really understood these things. And Bobby Kennan, mm-hmm. right from the get-go, over 20 years in the ASUN, Bruce Evans, my first two hires when we got here. And then Jeremy Shiat came. Larry Shiat, obviously the great coach, his son. And Byron Taylor, mm-hmm. who we brought in, the only outlier that we hired, who we brought in that first group. And as we went through and as we moved, people understood more and more and more. And now, obviously going to the tournament, winning three out of the last six championships, only one of 27 teams in America to win three or more championships in the last 6 years. So we've done a really, really good job. And now what we're doing is we just continually reload. Mm-hmm. We don't ever talk about rebuild or we don't know. And we're not young and we're no. Like this is what we do. Here's who we are. Let's embrace it. And more importantly, let's only worry about going 1-0. Mm-hmm. Just worry about winning today. That's all.
And I know too, it's kind of like the state of South Carolina. If you're east of the Mississippi, it feels like the majority of people have somebody in their family that lives in the state of South Carolina. I feel like that same thing can be said about Florida. If you're east of the Mississippi, you've been to Florida, you've vacationed to Florida, and you've had time in Florida. You know, I think there's a lot of easy recruit. I don't want to say easy. No recruiting is easy, but there's a lot of stories to be told. There's a lot of familiarity there with a lot of people that can open some doors there.
I think in a couple different ways, and I'll tell you one story in particular. And yes, wholeheartedly agree. Learned this little bit of a way in which I need to do a better job. Mm-hmm. And I'm certainly trying to. But a 2-second rule where I ask you a question. So Jamie, any chance, like you got any relatives or anybody that mm-hmm. people you know live down in Florida? And then you say, just say my uncle.
Yeah, my uncle.
So your uncle lives here. Oh man, where's he live? And now I jump on you. And in the meanwhile, you were going to say, oh, I forgot. You know what? My aunt actually lives in Jacksonville, but you never said that.
Yeah.
But I jumped on you, right? But if I waited 2 seconds and allowed you to finish speaking, and then watch this.
Mm-hmm. My uncle lives there.
That's 2 seconds right there.
Yeah.
Like that's a long time to kind of be in flux. But now you get to finish. And if it's just your uncle, you completed your sentence. But if it would, because what happens is we jump on your uncle, we keep going on your uncle. The next thing you know, we forget about your aunt. Yeah. Or we're telling stories about something else. And now your aunt lived here too.
Yeah, or it could be something like my uncle lived there. And then it's like, but when I was a kid, we used to travel down there every single year. And we had this great time. I remember this one restaurant that we went to. And, you know, the whole story could unfold if you, you know, just wait those 2 seconds. And then it has a positive thought in their head. And then now they're equating positive things with Florida. And then all of a sudden it's doing your job for you.
And the caveat to that is that maybe they're like, well, oh, you know what? I think my aunt actually went to UNF. Now I think she, you know what? She, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But here's a great story, recruiting story. And your faith and your belief and kind of how you look at life is completely up to you. Mm-hmm. That's your choice at that moment when it comes that time. However, because we have such a deep faith and we have a deep understanding, mm-hmm. here's what happened. In 2015, when we went to the NCAA tournament, Bo Beach went 8-for-10 from three against Robert Morris in an 81-77 unfortunate loss for the Ospreys. Mm-hmm. Watching that game as a ninth grader, rising 10th grader, was a guy named Carter Hendrickson. Mm-hmm. Carter Hendrickson told his dad, that's where I want to go to school. I want to play at a place like that, because I think I can be like him. So they Google and they whatever. Well, time passes. The University of North Florida is not recruiting Carter Hendrickson. Mm-hmm. I've not been to Lexington to recruit him. I've been to Lexington, though, because an old friend of mine who was an assistant at Duquesne, mm-hmm. when I used to work their camps back in the 90s, invited me to be the guest speaker at the High School Coaches Association mm-hmm. in Lexington, Kentucky. And while I was speaking there, a guy who I befriended when he used to work here in Florida was there. Mm-hmm. Also, too, a side caveat, my college coach, Jim Burson, spoke at the same time as me. So Jim Burson spoke and I spoke, and I played for him in 1983. Mm-hmm. So you talk about,
yeah,
you know, just a funny time, how we, you know, we get older. So fast forward, Carter is now going into his senior year. So let's see. He was a sophomore this year. So that would be 19. He was a sophomore. So 18, he was a freshman. So 17, he's going into 17, 18. Mm-hmm. So I'm recruiting at Disney. And it is the second to last day. And this team is getting ready to play. And if they lose, they're eliminated. Mm-hmm. Coach sees me, who saw me at the speaking engagement, and said, Coach, I got a guy for you that I really want you to go see. He reminds me of
your guy,
Bo Beach.
Yeah.
He reminds me of Bo Beach. Oh, okay. Bo's pretty good now. He played for the Nets and had a great summer league and making his great pro overseas. And I said, okay, great. He said, but here's the caveat. His mother just retired. His daddy works from home, and they want to move to Florida, and nobody knows it. Okay. How about that?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. So I tell Bruce, I said, Bruce, listen, you go watch the guy we have to watch. We've been babysitting. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go watch this kid. Two things are going to happen. I'm going to text you and tell you to hurry up and come over, or I'll be watching with you shortly.
Yeah.
I go over, I sit down, and listen to me carefully. He was awful. He stunk. He sucked so bad it wasn't even funny. He was terrible. However, he could play. Mm-hmm. He could dribble. He could pass. He was tough. He rebounded the ball like nobody's business. Mm-hmm. He took good shots. He was an unbelievable teammate. But he just couldn't make any shots that game. So I hurry up and text, get over here, hurry up right away. Get over here. You got to see this kid. They lose, which was even better.
Yeah.
So we offer him. And now, every time we offer somebody, you know, everybody kind of, whoa, who is this guy? You know, well, who is this guy? Next thing you know, we're like the bet. Get an offer from us. That's awesome for you because there's other people going to start running at you. Yeah. So we go to recruit him and we realize like he's plays for Lexington Christian, who's Kyle Rode, who plays at Liberty. Mm-hmm. They have another kid that ended up at an NAIA school. That's where Burnett played, that played at Belmont, the lefty that hit the shot to send to the tournament. Matt Rose, the freshman of the year for Samford, who transferred to Lipscomb and had a great career. They all played the same school.
Yeah.
So it's a really good school for basketball. So we are going to have to recruit this kid and see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And again, God does not hurt people. Don't misinterpret what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But he sprains his ankle. But he wants to impress all these people that are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Western Kentucky, Lipscomb, Belmont, Austin Peay, Liberty, Eastern Kentucky. Mm-hmm. All these schools are coming in to see Kyle and him because they're really talented. And he can't play. He looks bad. He plays bad. And I'm sitting there with those guys, and they're like, yeah, man, I thought he was going to – yeah, I'm like, yeah, I know. Oh, yeah, it's crazy. I know. And then we go to Culver's.
Mm-hmm.
We get dinner, and I'm giving them this recruiting thing. Like, people in Culver's must think I'm nuts, right? And anyways, long story short, he's – as a sophomore, he's, you know, all league.
Yeah.
So he's going to be – you know, he's going to be our next, you know, class-wise, he's going to be our next – you know, great talent. But at the end of the day, it came down between us and Bellarmine. And to the kid's credit, he promised Coach Davenport he would visit.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a man of his word. And now Bellarmine's coming into our league.
Yeah.
So my point is, you know, those things happen exactly like you said.
Mm-hmm.
It just, you know, the way things transpire, you know, it is what it is.
I bet Bellarmine didn't get him the Butterburger. The Butterburger is what sold it at Culver's.
I tell you what now, Culver's, have you ever had the Norwegian cod?
Oh, man, I think Culver's is spectacular. And their milkshakes and everything, too.
I stay away from that. I just do the food. Yeah, I stay away from that custard, yeah.
I love it. But I want to get into a little bit you and your growth up as a coach and stuff. You as a player – out of high school, you played JUCO, and then you went to play a little bit at Greensboro College and all that kind of stuff. My question was, as a player, how did JUCO – what were your thoughts on JUCO, and how did that help and that route for you?
Junior college was the best scenario that ever happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
I had a 1.2 my first semester at Muskingum. Mm-hmm. I was a really good student. I was just unintelligent. And – my family didn't really care that I was in college. My brother actually took me to college.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up being the first person to get my degree from our family. But I just was, I was a clown. And I just didn't understand and mm-hmm. probably didn't have the guidance I needed either. So I came home and I started selling cars and ended up managing McDonald's. And when I managed McDonald's, I realized I was really good. I was making a lot of money, like $20,000. So I was almost right there with Jeff Bezos. And I was going to own six of them.
Uh-huh.
And I went from a crew person to a manager. And I was killing it. And I got to go to this place called McKee's Rock, which is a very, very, very – my daddy grew up there. It's a very, very, very tough place to live.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a bad store. It was a 3F store. And me and this other guy, Ralph, were sent there to clean up the store.
Mm-hmm.
And we did. So I was flying. Hamburger U, there is such a place. I mean, I was flying. And Bobby Farrington walked through the front door. And Bobby used to block my shot and score on me at Quaker Valley down the road. And Bobby came in, and he needed a job, mm-hmm. a part-time job. And got into conversation with him, and he said, "Drisk, I'm going to Butler County Community College." Now, not that one, not the one you smiled about, the one in Zillion Oak in Butler, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And he said, "I'm going to Butler. community college to play basketball. I need a part-time job. And I said, in my mind, I've been hooping all the time. Mm-hmm. Like I'd get off work, I'd drive downtown. There was this place in downtown Pittsburgh where all the ballers came, and I thought I was Scotty Scowls. I thought I was better than Isaiah Thomas. I'm telling you, I was going to the league.
Yeah.
I was going to the league. And people really liked me, and I was tough, and I could do certain things. And so I really learned how to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
I really learned how to talk with people. I really learned how to be what it was like to be in the inner city, and what it was like just to be around a completely just people that I had no. I grew up in a blue collar town with five mm-hmm. brothers, and it's the first town outside of the city. So it was what it was. But as Bobby came in, I'm thinking, man, I say, let me ask you a question. You think they'd let me come up and play? And he's like, yeah, Leah, I'm going up to watch them play. Why don't you come watch them play with me? It's like a recruiting visit for him. So I go up to watch them play. Great story, by the way.
Yeah.
I go up to watch them play, and Coach Hartung, so they're warming up. And Lance Cox, who played at North Hills High School, I played at Northgate. And I walked in, and I know Lance, and Lance is on the team. So I walk under the basket, and I'm kicking it with Lance.
Yeah.
He's warming up, and I'm just standing there. I don't know any better. I don't know protocol. And this guy comes up to me, 6'2", 220 pounds, 3 or 4 years removed from a three-year career in Australia playing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about, like, he got done playing. He would go work two jobs. Like, he's got 9 children, I think. And he's just an unbelievable human being. One of my dearest, dearest friends. And he's like, can I help you? And I turn to him and I say, no, I'm good. And he's like, no, can I help you? And I was like, no, I'm just kicking it with Lance. He's like, well, kick it with Lance after the game. Right now he's getting ready for the game, get in the stands. And I was, back then I wasn't who I am now. And I'm like, man, who do you think you are? And so I go up in the stands. So this is a great story.
Yeah.
So the game goes on, and I'm like, man, I know this is where God wants me. God wants me in basketball. And I'm like, man, I got to figure this out. So go home. So Bobby is going up every week to play. It's probably a solid 45 to an hour
mm-hmm.
from Pittsburgh. And so I said, hey, man, I said, I think I want to go there. He said, well, write Coach a note. So I wrote Coach a note. Coach is in the office, opens up the note. Lance is sitting in the office. And I mentioned Lance in the note. And this was back when we typed notes and sent them and people actually opened mail. And he looks at Lance and he says, hey, do you know a dude named Matthew Driscoll? And he goes, yeah, Coach, you met him the other day. He goes, I did? He goes, he wants to come here and hoop, and he sounds pretty intriguing. He's like, where'd I meet him? He's like, remember the red-haired dude, about 5'8", underneath the basket, and you told him to get in the stands? He said,
yeah.
I'm serious, and threw it away. So I get no response from the letter. So now Bobby goes up. It's 2 weeks, 3 weeks. I say, man, you think I come up? He goes, yeah. Why don't you just come up? So I go up, and I play. So anyways, to shorten the story, Coach, finally, so at the end of the night, the best players got to play on the main floor.
Mm-hmm.
So we had two floors, two courts, losers and winners, and then eventually the best players. Well, the first time I go up, I'm not out there. And long story short, I end up winning over his favor, and I end up going there. And what's crazy is he tells me, he says, Driss, just so you know, you'll never start. Ronnie Lenhart is going to start. He's from Butler High School.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going to start. And he tells me that. Like, he's like, he's from Butler High School, and he's going to start. I don't care if you're close or even better. He's from the local high school. He is who people are going to want to come see. You're not starting. Mm-hmm. So I started one game because somebody got hurt. We started together.
Mm-hmm.
But I came off the bench. And then Jim Tribbett came up recruiting somebody else, and he saw me. And I told him, if you can get me in school, Division III school, and I have to pay less than $750 out of my own pocket, then I'll come to your school. Mm-hmm. Coach, I was an RA at a school that I'd never gone to before. He got me an RA job.
Yeah.
That's how good Tripp was. Yeah. Of course, he just passed in November. But I was an RA, and I also worked for the president's catering and through the cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got steak probably twice a week. You know, it's great. It was awesome.
Good.
You know, so the JUCO thing was important to me because mm-hmm. it helped me, you know, kind of, and my brother committed suicide that year, which was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Coach R, I can remember like it was yesterday. The Big East was on when I was eating Doritos when my brother called. But, you know, Bobby Farrington, if he had not been in my life, I'm not sure how it would have turned out. And had Dickie Hartung, my coach, mm-hmm. not been in my life, I don't know how it would have turned out. And so I was really isolated, probably a better word,
mm-hmm.
with people that helped me get through a very, very difficult time in my life there. And that led me to Greensboro. And I didn't finish at Greensboro. Mm-hmm. But what I learned along the way as a player, and you can take this whatever way you want to take it, but I learned along the way is you better have really good players if you want to be a really good coach.
Jimmies and Joes.
And X's and O's, Jimmies and Joes, which is something we always said at Baylor in 03. But really, you know, players make plays. You can run all the plays you want, head tap and nose and shirt pull, but it don't matter. And the other thing someone said the other day, and I can't remember who it was. I'd love to give him credit, but I don't remember. You've never seen a Hall of Fame coach that never had Hall of Fame players.
Yeah.
I think it might have been on the Jordan special, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. Like, there's no Hall of Fame coaches that didn't have Hall of Fame players.
But,
so, you know, it's the JUCO thing. And I tell people all the time, like, and I actually encourage kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you might want to go, no, I'm not going. Whoa. You know, and the kid we got from JUCO was like a big-time student. He played for Matt Brown, and Matt Brown, you know, only takes high academic kids. You know, Yvonne Gondea-Rosa was all-league. Noah Horkel was all-league. There were JUCO, the kid I told you about in South Carolina. He was a junior college walk-on, Jamie.
Wow.
He was a walk-on at junior college.
Amazing.
You realize how low that is?
Yeah.
He was a walk-on junior college player at Spartanburg Methodist. They had 3 scholarships. He led them and lost in the semifinals to Central Florida, who won the championship. And then the consolation game against Vincennes at 28-11. So, you know, so JUCO, you know, what does it mean? And if you're a qualifier, you only got to go 1 year.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I answered your question, but.
No, that was awesome. That's exactly one, because there's a stigma about JUCO going around, and it seemed to be very positive for you. And I just kind of wanted to dive into that a little bit to talk about the positives about that route.
But really, Jamie, think about your route.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about your route while I say this, right? And you think about what I just said. It wasn't about junior college.
Mm-mm.
It wasn't even about Muskingum. Because if I would have done what I should have done, the way in which I should do it with a purpose, and my feet are solid embraced in that ground, I would have been successful at Muskingum.
Yeah.
But I chose not to. But when I got to JUCO, I embraced what it was. I embraced what my purpose was. I realized I need to be in basketball. Like, basketball is where I need to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that it's JUCO. It was a way in which I was going to further myself. And here's the greatest part of the whole story, Jamie. When I eventually got my very first head coaching job at the college level, Division III,
mm-hmm.
the assistant coach at the junior college was one of the greatest players that ever played there.
Mm-hmm.
So if I don't go there, I don't ever get the job.
Yeah.
It was because of that dot on the map that allowed me to get the job. So, you know, there's so many things that occur. If people would just embrace why they're there.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I asked Frank the other day, Like, you got to tell people your story. Frank Young, assistant at Appalachian State, was with us for both championships. Because your story is better than anything. Because you went through it. The trials and tribulations, when I always tell our guys, your triumphs will be way greater than your trials if you have a purpose and you're moving forward with it.
Absolutely. And
perseverance is so important. It gives us so much power. Just like with this pandemic, our perseverance is going to give us the power. My wife says the only thing normal is a setting on a washing machine. Every day is different. Yeah. There's no such thing as normal and all that other stuff they're using.
You got to live where your feet are planted.
And no doubt, but also with a purpose.
Yep.
With a purpose.
And I wanted to touch on how you got into coaching a little bit. You know, you leave Greensboro, you come back up home, and you're working corporate jobs and whatnot, and then you get back into high school.
I can sell a car now. I can sell a Honda now.
And you get the itch back for basketball. Basketball is something that just lives within you and all that kind of stuff. I want to talk about how you got into the coaching ranks.
So when I get the high school job at my alma mater by being at a gas station, and I end up becoming the head coach and all that stuff. So now I'm like, so now I'm not playing anymore. Now I'm actually coaching. And now I know this is what I need to do. So I had about, I don't even know how much hours I had, but I had basically a year and a half left of school. And my father, who did not help me at the beginning in 1983, now fast forward to 1990, and now he understands I need to be in coaching. Coaching's what it's all about. I want to help Matthew. So he helps pay for me to go back to Slippery Rock, which is about an hour and some change from where I'm living, because I still have to have a, you know, make a living. And I had recently gotten married. So I was going to do certain things and make sure I was going to be on the right path to kind of be a teacher and a coach. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if I was going to stay at my alma mater or what I was going to do. So I take the job at my alma mater and I get through it. And then I want to go back to Slippery Rock. Well, if you remember, I said earlier, I went to JUCO at Butler, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Well, Butler, Pennsylvania is about 15 minutes south of Slippery Rock. So Dickie says to me, Drisk, here's what you need to do. Quit your job. Don't worry about being the head coach at your alma mater anymore. Come and be my assistant while you're going to class. I don't care if you ever come to practice. Just come to the games. Mm-hmm. But if you want to recruit in Pittsburgh, if you want to come to practice, come. But if you can't, don't worry about it. But here's what we're going to do. We're going to set you up. And then once you come here and you be my assistant, we're going to find out what high schools up here are hiring teachers. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to do your student teaching at that high school, in the elementary school. And then we're going to get you the JV job at the high school while you're doing your student teaching. And then they're going to like you so much, they're going to hire you as an elementary teacher. And I'm like this. Okay.
Yeah. That sounds amazing.
That's what I'm going to do. And you know what I did, Jamie?
What's that?
I did everything he said.
And it worked out just like he said.
Exactly like he said.
Amazing.
But again, I was all in. Mm-hmm. I was embraced. I had purpose. And as I was doing these things. So that's how it transpired. But here's the best part of the whole thing. We don't know what else it holds for us. Like I just told you.
Yeah.
A Division III head job. Right? But even greater, the guy I worked for at Seneca Valley, mm-hmm. that guy was from New England. And he always took his teams to Providence's team camp. Mm-hmm. And who was the head coach of Providence in the 90s?
Tina.
Rick Barnes.
Barnes.
And who was his assistant? Larry Shiat.
Larry.
So as the head, we take our team 13 hours on a bus to Providence to team camp. I don't know. I'm like, okay, whatever. And that's how I meet Larry Scheid. And Larry Scheid and I strike up a relationship. By the way, guess who was the director of basketball operations?
Who's that?
Dan Gavitt. And guess what? Guess who was a player up there and kind of working in the college coaching? Kenny McDonald.
Oh, wow. It's crazy.
And by the way, Dennis Felton. And by the way, Fran Fraschella. You know, so I don't know anything. All I know is I'm going up there to work camp. Well, I bit the relationship, right? So far, it's when Boys in the Hood came out, right?
Mm-hmm.
As I saw Boys in the Hood, right? The whole camp. So Coach Giant really has we have a relationship. We really like each other. And now he says, every time I come to Pittsburgh, I'm going to call you.
Mm-hmm.
So five-star. And back then, Metro Index at Cal PA. So I'm seeing Coach, and we're starting this relationship while they end up going to Clemson. So now I'm working camps at Clemson, you know. And what's crazy is our first ever really, really talented player here that scored 1,000 points for us, Parker Smith, in the mid-90s, his high school coach, he was a JV coach actually,
mm-hmm.
He brought Russ Triaga, I know you know the name, he brought his teams to Clemson's team camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to work them.
Yeah.
And as soon as Parker left Tennessee State, you know who he called? Me, in 2009. He's like, this kid's perfect for you. I'm like, I'll take him. He's like, the only way, he's 142. I said, I don't care. I'll take him. You know who we beat on him?
Who?
Gannon.
Wow. Wow.
So that's kind of how – and there's actually – there's a whole lot more to that. Like, there's incredible people – that were put in front of me,
mm-hmm.
and scenarios that transpired. Like I told you about the job at the Division III school.
Yeah.
Well, there was a strike. The paper was on strike. The school was defunct for 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be a really good NAIA school, but they didn't do some really good things, so they stopped the program. Then they built a $3-4 million brand new gymnasium. So I'm like, listen to me, Jamie. Listen to what I'm going to tell you. I'm a JV high school coach, and I'm going to get a Division III head job. Yeah, okay.
It's amazing.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. That's going to really happen. And my assistant coach, Bill Miller, is like, Drisk, I'm going to get you an interview. I'm like, there's no way. And the paper's on strike. So nobody even knows they're even coming back, half of the people,
mm-hmm.
right? The World Wide Web wasn't as worldwide. And I get an interview, and Jamie, I get the job.
You're hired.
No, wait a second. It gets better. The athletic director at Seneca Valley,
uh-huh.
where I was coaching now for 4 years, and I was an elementary teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I was a really good elementary teacher. And I'm serious.
Uh-huh.
I was the first male for most of my students.
Yeah.
Fifth grade. And I was 27, 28, so I'm full of life. I was the best thief. I would take everybody's lessons plans and make them energized. And they loved me there.
Uh-huh.
Loved me there. But the AD said, who, by the way, was Jim Kelly's high school football coach, he says to me, I said, listen, I got this Division III job. They offered me the job, and I took the job.
Mm-hmm.
And he said – and I said, I'm going to quit. And he said, you can't quit. I said, whoa, 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 what do you mean I can't quit? He said, I got you a teaching job. If you quit, you're going to lose your teaching job. I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, what am I going to do? I can't do that.
Yeah.
So what's great is I go and I call the lady back. And I, 24 hours later, I said, Lynn, listen, I can't take the job. She said, what? I said, I can't take the job. So I turned the job down. Now, here's where I made an error as a young person. This is where your young people got to get better. I went to my principal
mm-hmm.
about 4 days later. I said, Gloria, let me ask you a question. Did you hire me because I coach JV basketball, or did you hire me because I'm a – she said, I could care less what you do after 3:30. from 8 to 3:30, all I want you to do is take care of my children. You take care of my children. You keep doing what you're doing. I don't care what you coach. And I was pissed. I mean, I was pissed. I got in. I went right up there and I said, I quit. So now I ain't got a job.
Wow.
While I'm at the elementary school, by the way, as good as God is, I meet my wife.
Yeah.
Because she worked at a home for abused and neglected kids. Mm-hmm. And one of her kids had been sexually abused since he was 4 years old, was good enough, really intelligent, was good enough to come to a public school. He was in my classroom. But anyways, so now I'm in Zillionopal, which is right near Slippery Rock, where I went to school to get my degree, and right near Butler. So there's a lot of, you know, obviously you can see the puzzles are, you know, the pieces are right there. So Dickie says, hey, Drisk, do you know the name Mike Wilson? Do you know that name, Jamie? Do you remember him?
Beach Boys. That's all I know, Mike Wilson.
Okay. Now, so Mike Wilson was at Slippery Rock, and then he took a scouting job with the Wizards. He was in the NBA for a long time. He was at Penn State with Ed DeCholis, and then got to the NBA and is with the Denver Nuggets right now. He left Slippery Rock, and that's how I got the job.
Yeah.
And so I go up to $1,300. I don't care. So I take the job. But what I did that was smart is after I told the lady I couldn't take the job, and after I stopped coaching, I wrote her a note. And I said, Lynn, I made a big mistake. And I should have done a better job of finding out exactly what I was being told. However, if your scenario ever presents itself again, please reach out to me. That was in August. In October, I come home. And guess what's blinking?
Voicemail.
My message light on a, on the on your message machine that nobody has anymore. And that was the only year, if you remember, that basketball practice wasn't allowed to start until November 1st. And it was about 10 days. It was like October 20th or something. And I hit the button, and it's her. And the guy she hired, who recruited for 1 year, because you got 1 year to recruit, not to play, just quit.
Wow.
So is God as good?
Yeah.
I end up, and there's a lot more to that story, but I end up being getting the job again.
And I want to talk about that time from 93 to 97 when you were the head coach at La Roche. What did you learn most about your voice as a coach during that time?
I was out of control. I was trying to be so many other people that I didn't even know who I was trying to be. However, I was always true to my values of what my father taught me, which was your name's on everything. And make sure you treat people the way you want to be treated. Now, as a coach, I probably was a little bit too volatile. However, we won one game my first year. So basically what happened was we came back into a league that was a scholarship league, but we were going to go Division III. But we had to get through that moratorium, you know, the one where you got to get beat up and just pounded.
Yeah.
So we're one win our first year, five our next year, I think five the next year. And we finally go 15-10 and actually 15-6 against Division III. But during that time, you know, we're getting blasted, whatever. So anyways, here's what I learned. The last year, going into my last year, Jerry Slocum, who coached at Youngstown State, one of my mentors, who has more wins than I'll ever have, because I ain't coaching. He says to me, he beat me by 40 every time. And he says to me, hey, listen, I really like you. Why don't you drive up again and spend a day with me? I think I can help you. Because I think you have a chance to get to go. So I drive up and spend a day. First thing he tells me, I have a kid on my team. He ended up scoring 1,800 points. And he had 55 in one game. And I am on him. Like, he takes a bad shot, I'm on him. You're selfish. You got to pass the ball. You know, he's first thing he says to me, he says, Drisk, you better let that kid play. And you better learn that your best players are going to take bad shots. Now, you got to coach them. And you got to reel it in. But that's why they're your best player.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy cow, is that I really learned how to become better from that aspect of it. And then going from there and being with Coach Shy, I learned a lot of nuances. And the beauty was I always was allowed to stay on campus because I was either restricted earnings or I just was that guy that wasn't a recruiter yet. And I got to practices, individual. I learned the trade. I mean, my craft was like, I do it. And then I knew I could always recruit because recruiting is nothing about, it's nothing to recruit. You have to be able to do two things. Number one, evaluate. Well, I got to see these guys every day. I knew what a player looked like. I knew how to help a player get better and yada, yada, yada. So I knew that. Mm-hmm. And then number two, you had to be able to relationships and build them and listen. And so I knew I could do that part. And then, you know, kind of as that continued to unfold, then I got to Baylor and being around Coach Drew from an offensive place and Coach Shide from a defensive place. It really helped mold me into 2009 to who I became. So I would say from 93 to 97, I really learned not to be.
and I want to dive into that a little bit too, because then you go Wyoming, Clemson, Valpo, and Baylor over that next 12-year period. You know, different leagues, different geographic locations, different levels, and all that kind of stuff. What did you learn about yourself? You know, having already directed a program and having already been the head coach, what did you learn about that yourself in that 12-year period to help you be a successful coach coming into 2009?
One of the first things I knew, you know, there's some feedback. Is that you or me?
It's probably me.
So the first thing I learned was when I always wanted to be a full-time coach. So when I went to Wyoming with Coach, and there's some really good stories about that. When I went to Wyoming with Coach, that was my first opportunity to have one job. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't even say that because I don't like that word. I don't go to work and I don't have a job. It was my first opportunity to be a coach and solely a coach. And I thought to myself, man, this is going to be incredible that I'm going to be able. And what I took with me was I had assistants that were part-time and they were there and weren't there. They were there and trying to be there. And when they weren't there and came, they tried to help so much, but really didn't know anything that was going on because they weren't. And I knew and I learned early that the greatest thing you can do as an assistant is get the head coach's job as simplified and as very, 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 like, here's what you need to do. Here's like, I mean, and I did that to the nth degree with Coach Shyatt. And then with Coach Drew, it was kind of different because he was younger and come up in a different way. But making those jobs, like have the answers before they have the stuff in front of them with four different, here's your four choices, just make a decision. Here's your three things, just make a decision. Whether it be taking pictures with the team, whether it be where we're going to eat for different meals, whether it be how we're going to handle football games, whatever it was, have a calendar and just be ahead of it and try to stay ahead of it so that coach could worry about the two most important things that a head coach has to worry about, his players and basketball. Mm-hmm. Like, he's got to be worried about his players and basketball. And his players is also his future players. So that I knew as a head coach, like, I had to do everything. And I had good guys. But I had to do everything. So I really, really, really wanted to make sure of that. So I brought that with me. And the second thing was, my daddy always taught me, if you don't have something to say, don't say it. And if someone asks a question in a group, And all you're going to do is agree with what everybody else said or say something what somebody else says. Mm-hmm. Just say, I don't have an answer. Like, I have no opinion.
Yeah.
Because all you're doing is mucking in the water. Mm-hmm. And I brought that mentality with me. And I was not afraid to challenge Coach. I was not afraid to think outside the box. I mean, I'll give you a scenario. The triangle and two, North Carolina was number one in the country. And mm-hmm. we upset them. You know, it was kind of on a whim. It was kind of, we had played a triangle and two against, or actually we played a box and one against New Mexico when they were killed in the country. We were at Wyoming when we had beaten fourth in the country, Utah, went to the Final Four that year. And then we beat New Mexico as well. And I knew Coach kind of was comfortable with it. And when we got to that Carolina scenario, it felt like it was one of the best things to do, because of Haywood and Lang and Cable and Julius Peppers and so they got there that you could not guard. But I was never afraid to bring those things up. And I was never afraid if coach said, well, that's dumb. He would never say that. But, you know, that, why would we say that? So I wasn't afraid of, because here's what we tell our guys. If you don't want to know the answer, don't ask the question.
No doubt.
However, it might not be what you want.
Yeah.
And I tell guys all the time, I got a high definition face for radio. So I've heard more no's from my life asking girls for dates. The only time I ever got a yes is I asked them to go out with my best friend. And they're like, oh, yeah, that'd be awesome. I'm like, oh, that's what a yes sounds like when you ask somebody. I learned that transitioning. The other thing I learned is it's better to have a niche than to be like everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for instance, let's say Baylor. Well, we can't beat Kansas in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a niche. We played zone. We played it different.
Mm-hmm.
We played offensively with NBA concepts and the way NBA. We had a niche. When we were at Clemson, we won, but not at the level we needed to. But we played hard-nosed defense. Mm-hmm. But the problem was, we were going to win 60-58.
Yeah.
It's hard to always play that way. You know, I can remember Tony Bennett, like, he got the job in 09 like I did. We were going to the Reebok camp in Philly, and we had just played him twice, Washington State, Baylor, back-to-back years.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, yesterday, I said to him, I said, Coach, just so you know, I've been in the ACC. I was there 5 years. I was there for 2 national championships, Maryland and Duke. I know what that means like.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you why you're going to be well in that league, because you're different.
Mm-hmm.
You ain't trying to be like everyone else. You are different. And because you're different, NC State's press us are different. Because you're different, you can recruit differently. And because you can recruit differently, you don't have to worry about it. It's Duke, Carolina, you ain't going to beat them. You know, back when I was in the ACP, there was only 8 teams. Like, you ain't going to beat them. So we had to compete against Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, NC State a little bit, but not a ton. But Georgia Tech and Wake Forest, those are probably us three. But I think I learned a lot about having a niche and being different. And I had that mentality. And when you think about this, I was in the ACC at its peak. I mean, argue with me. 1998 to 2003. Two nationals, argue. I was in the Big 12 at its peak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Durant, Beasley, Griffin. 3 players of the year. And normally the best RPI league or whatever, you know, all those. And think about it, back then it was 2 divisions. And we were in the South. We were playing Oklahoma State, Final Four, by the way. Oklahoma, Final Four, by the way. Texas. Them and Kansas always battling for the championship. Texas Tech, Bobby Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Texas A&M, Billy Clyde was getting there and turning that thing around. Right? And Baylor.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And we get to the tournament in 5 years after a murder. So I really learned about niche.
Mm-hmm.
And I really learned it's okay to be different. And I wasn't afraid to have it. I wasn't a yes man. So because of that, I think it's helped me here a lot in recruiting and then style of play. And obviously, too, the last 5 years, we led the country in 3-pointers, and we're going to shoot a ton of 3s. And, you know, we play a lot of zone, and you know, we're just different.
Mm-hmm.